It's August 12th, 2018. You're listening to episode 79 of Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Today, we will be talking about things like games with bad gameplay and great story, games with great story and bad gameplay, single-player games, Smash Brothers, and much, much more. Cookie, Scott, what have you guys been doing this week?
Well, the Call of Duty 4 beta, this is the second weekend of it, Black Ops 4, and my God, let me tell you, these guys are kind of just flooding the market with all the different kinds of shooters that are out there. So the newest mode that they've introduced is Heist. So it is CSGO. It is just Counter-Strike Go with a Call of Duty skin over it. You start each match with, it doesn't matter what operator you use, everyone starts off with a pistol and $500. And then you got to go ahead and buy your upgrades, your armor, your different guns, and everything like that. So yeah, no, it's, they've got a CSGO mode now. So now we're officially doing PUBG, CSGO, and, oh God, Rainbow Six Siege. Oh, also Call of Duty, I guess, is one of the games that they've got that you can play there as well.
Inside of Call of Duty. How innovative. Yeah. do you find it does those game modes exceptionally well, or as well as the original modes? Games, rather.
So, as a person who's played all of those games, actually, now that I think about it, I like the fact that it is... I don't mind how they're doing it with the Counter-Strike Go, with their Counter-Strike mode. I don't mind how they're doing it. I like the buying system a lot better than I do in Counter-Strike, because with Counter-Strike, you know, it's the radio menu and you have to know where everything is. This one's a little more intuitive with, like, hey, I don't play these type of game modes. I see here that there's an empty thing with a plus sign, and that's usually where your primary gun shows. So that says, hey, you buy primary guns here. You buy secondary guns here. And, yeah, the prices are relatively balanced. I want to say you don't see as many, like, score streaks unless there's a team that's completely running away with each round because they're getting paid more money each time. That's when you start seeing score streaks getting purchased, which I think is, like, a really cool thing. It's like, oh, yeah, you can buy a score streak for this thing, and now there's an attack chopper. The still haven't played the PUBG mode yet. Hopefully that's going to be next weekend or some soon weekend. And then there's the... And I really like the whatever that mode, control mode was. It's still super, like, high intensity. Makes me wish I played a lot more of the diffusing game modes and things of that nature. All in all, yeah, I think they're doing a pretty good job on the modes that they're copying so far that I've played. There's a couple of balance things here and there that they're just still working on with the guns and the operator since it's still in beta and waiting until November for it to launch. But I'm liking the tweaks they're making so far. And now that it's the second weekend, even Lizzie can attest to their... They switched from a hit scan mode to everything's a projectile. All the bullets are projectiles. And they're doing that that recoil that you can learn and control. So Lizzie's been using this gun called the Spitfire since she first started playing this thing. And she is just, like, always on target. She knows exactly how to control this gun. And she's like, yeah, no, it's getting a lot easier and easier every time I fire it to, like, know which way it's going. It's not like a, hey, this has got mostly vertical recoil, but 10% of the time it'll shoot off to the left and then go up, or shoot off to the left and then go up, you know, mirrored and all that jazz. But so I picked up the Spitfire because I was like, oh, Lizzie's using it. I'm going to try this gun out. She's melting people with this thing. I can't control that gun at all. Like, I was just like, I don't know the patterns of this thing. I'm going to go back to my gun that I like to use. And she tried my gun, and she's like, nah, this isn't working. Not working for her at all. So yeah, so I am enjoying that is something that does happen in this game now. And then since they switched to projectiles, it's no longer like you're seeing kill swapping. So basically, I'll shoot at a character, they'll shoot at me, and we'll both die, because even though he killed me first, my last bullet left the chamber and hit him. And that took him down as well. So it's no longer like, oh yeah, you died, so that rocket that you shot, it just stopped mid-flight, because why would it not?
That's a pretty nice addition, I assume. You appreciate that?
I do. I appreciate that a lot.
There's nothing feeling better than if you die, you at least take your enemy with you in those games.
Pretty much. But yeah, so I've been playing a lot of Call of Duty, and it's the new month in that Switch game that I play sometimes with the tennis. Mario Tennis.
Mario Tennis. I was going to say, yeah. Stardew Valley.
So yeah, so this is also the next, it's now August, so also playing a bit more Mario Tennis now that they've introduced Blooper. The game is more balanced, I guess. I suck at that game. I haven't played this in forever.
I thought you said that you mastered the arts of Mario Tennis. Like, you were seeing the ones and zeros as you played.
I did master the art, and then they changed it.
And then they balanced it?
Yep. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess Waluigi and Bowser Jr. are no longer just sure-fied wins anymore. But yeah, I've been playing that, and oh god, there's like one more thing. Evo happened last weekend. So that got me back into wanting to play more fighting games, so I have been playing a lot more Street Fighter Alpha 3 and Street Fighter Third Strike on the Switch since I bought the 30th Anniversary Edition.
I heard that Dragon Ball Z kind of took over. Dragon Ball FighterZ kind of took over the spotlight at Evo.
Oh my god, those games were amazing. Sonic Fox took home the win this year. In Street Fighter V. Oh, yeah?
Is Sonic Fox the guy that wore the furry outfit?
Yes, Sonic Fox is a furry.
Okay.
His persona is a blue fox. And he plays for Team Echo Fox. So, things. But, no, he took home the win for that. Daigo got beat out by the UK in Street Fighter V, so that was kind of upsetting. And, yeah. So fighting games still exist, and they make me excited. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today on today's topic.
I'm going to take a wild shot in the dark here that your fighting games are somehow going to fall into the high quality gameplay, low quality story. But who knows? I'm looking forward to the surprise.
I've got both.
Have you ever seen Rick Fox wear the Sonic Fox hat, I guess you could say? You know, since Echo
not.
Fox is
owned
former
by
NBA
Rick Fox,
legend.
Yeah.
Rick Fox is competitive esports gaming company, whatever. Team is probably a better way to put it. Yeah, there's a shot I just saw of Rick Fox wearing the hat. It's pretty good.
He is wearing Sonic Fox's hat. You're correct. But yeah. Nice. So, Scott, what you been playing?
Video game wise, I've played a little bit of Doom, and I actually unearthed my Super Nintendo the other day. I think actually just yesterday, to enjoy a game that has possibly one of the most skeletal stories possible. And some of my favorite gameplay, the classic UN Squadron, which I don't know if I've brought up on this podcast before. It is a just little arcade shooter that I have been obsessed with ever since playing it like more than a decade ago. And plugging it in the other day reminded me that I have yet to get over how much I love this game. But not a huge amount in the video gaming department. Ideally, I'm going to have a lot more time coming up to be able to do so.
I think I played UN Squadron at a local Pizza Hut a handful of times.
I totally believe that. I've never seen an arcade cabinet for it, but I know that it comes originally from an arcade game.
Yeah,
it is definitely built like that.
After looking at the character select, I know for a fact I have.
Hey, yeah. Totally. Wait, is this on the...
It's on the Super Nintendo.
It's on the Classic, really?
No, it's on...
Oh,
my, actual. I scoured the ends of the earth to find the actual Super Nintendo cartridge for this game about 8 years back, and I have kept it in pristine condition ever since for whenever I get the hankering to play that game again. But yeah, it's not on the Classic. Actually, it is maybe the only game that I own for my Super Nintendo that is not on the Classic. So it is sitting side by side with my mini Classic SNES on my on the lower shelf of my entertainment center / double decker coffee table, which is right behind this floral couch. So
Scott, would you be interested to know that UN Squadron is apparently part of a series, like a franchise?
Oh yeah, I think I've actually heard a little bit about this, but I've never played any of the other games.
An anime too. It has 12 episodes and it's called Area 88.
I mean, it can't be nearly as bad as the F-Zero anime, so I might watch it.
Maybe it's actually got a rich storyline to it, and I don't know. Kind of looks, good God, the protagonist's hair is ridiculous.
Oh, you're thinking of Shin Kazuma?
Yeah. If you see some of the OVA imagery, you will notice how, like, not only does it just like cover part of his face through the helmet, you'll see some three quarters angle views where the hair is like jetting outwards like a plume, and it goes out.
Yeah.
Like it goes almost to the extent or the length of his shoulder.
From a side profile, it almost kind of looks like a bird like beak, like that hooked kind of toucan shape. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the title of the other UN Squadron style games are? Like, there's UN Squadron, but what are the other games?
Sorry, what was that?
What are the other games that are apparently sequels or spiritual successors?
Okay, so the game I'm seeing here is Carrier Air Wing.
Carrier Air Wing.
Released in Japan as U.S. Navy. It's a spiritual sequel to UN Squadron, released during the previous year. As with the original, players choose any one of three different jet fighters and battle their way through 10 enemy-packed stages.
It does not... I'm looking at it right now, just some images, and I may pull up some videos of gameplay. It does not look as good.
Yeah, interestingly enough, it was... So this is only an arcade game, and it released the year after UN Squadron, whereas UN Squadron released in 91 on SNES. So they might have had to improve upon the game even more.
Yeah.
I played this. I've played this cabinet before.
Yeah, man, this is one of my favorite. Like, this is a childhood favorite for sure. Carrier Air Wing looks like garbage. That's all I have to say. Okay, well, that's it. That's all I've done for gaming. Honestly, I'm excited to actually do some in the upcoming week, but I've had some crazy busy times that I'm finally kind of getting out of, which is nice. But it's nothing exciting enough to talk about either. It's kind of like with Neil. There's just so much work to be done that my personal life has had to take a backseat for a bit.
Yep. I forgive you.
Thank you.
I picked up God of War. God of War 4.
What?
Or not 4, I guess just God of War for PS4. And Tiff's been playing that, and I've been watching a bit. I'll probably pick it up at some point after I finish Octopath Traveler. But nothing new to really talk about there. Oh, sorry?
How much time do you think you've put into Octopath Traveler at this point? That's a game that I really want to get back to, and I am worried that I am just like scratching the surface of it. Well, I know I am.
I've put in 50 hours.
Okay, yeah.
And I have not started any of the chapter fours yet.
Do you suppose there's 4 or 5 chapters?
I believe there are probably 4, because everything seems to get to be readying up to be wrapped up in a final chapter, and chapter 4 seems to be that conclusion point, unless each of these things is going to have a twist and a continuation. I don't see a chapter 5 happening.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm starting to see some overlap between the stories more and more, and I'm assuming you haven't gotten much further from the last time you talked about it, but it, like, even
I don't even know if I've made any progression from that.
From like a couple weeks ago or whenever?
Yeah, yeah. But understand that with a game like Octopath Traveler, I'm really not too wary of spoilers at this point. Just because...
I get you. I don't think I necessarily have to talk about spoilers. I will just say that I am starting to notice certain things carry over from character to character to character, and things are starting to tie together, and I'm not sure how far that's going to actually happen, but it certainly seems like there's something running afoul that is affecting multiple characters now. We'll say that much. Well, before we talk about our main topic for the day, did you want to go over the Nintendo Direct?
Yes, I do. Did either of you guys get to see the Nintendo Direct for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate?
I did, but I like missed part of it, I guess, because there was like one announcement that got made for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate that I don't remember seeing at Nintendo Direct.
Okay, so the one that I'm mostly focused on is what happened at EVO 2018. So it was on the 8th. And that is, in this direct, we got some new characters announced. Is it Simon Beaumont? Is the last name Beaumont?
Yeah, Belmont.
Belumonto.
Okay, Belmont. Belmont. Okay. So we have Simon and Richter Belmont. Richter is an echo form of Simon. I have never played a Castlevania game, so I don't have any familiarity with them. But their kits look relatively fun, and they're very exciting and interesting character adds, because Castlevania is a really well-known video game franchise. And seeing the demonstration of these characters utilized in battles, they seem like they're going to be very fun kind of technical item or like B button based attackers, very similar to how I feel a lot of really effective Link players have utilized Link over the years. So I'm really looking forward to that. And the new stages that they announced. Oh, I'm sorry. There are a couple more characters that they mentioned for Echo characters, which are Crom and Dark Samus. And I'll get to the last character at the end following the Nintendo Direct kind of format. Crom is, it looks like, a Roy Echo character, so he should be another like close quarters sword fighter similar to Roy. And I don't really care
Echo
about
character
Crom at all.
The exact same, just a skin change.
It is not a skin change. Yeah, they have like moderate tweaks to their kit. If you have any examples, Cookie, feel free to fill in.
So like Roy and
so
Marth,
think
right?
of Yeah. Or Ike and what's his face?
Does Ike have an Echo character?
No, but he plays real similar to that other guy.
Ganon?
Ganon and Falcon. those are kind of Echo character likes. Those are like the first thoughts of Echo characters, since they have similar move sets, but Captain Falcon's going to be a lot faster than Ganon would be. And Ganon's going to hit you a bit harder.
And so for like Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, there are some Echo characters that used to be just reskins. Daisy and Peach is one. Daisy's kit has been modified slightly from Peach's, and so now Daisy is an Echo character. But previously in all the other games, Daisy's skin was just something you could put on Peach, but her kit didn't change whatsoever. So there are changes like that. And I think one of the things that they're doing for this, one, it's going to help with actually condensing the screen, I think, quite a bit for character select, since there will be so many characters. But they're actually putting them into the same slots where you can switch between these Echo characters. In the other games, like Cookie was giving an example with Ganon and Captain Falcon, these were two characters that had a very similar kit that were like slightly different, and they were essentially two very separate characters. And characters that are still distinct like that, like Ganon and Captain Falcon, who are not the same character or in the same franchise or anything of that, will still be separate on the screen. But the Crom-Roy matchup means that they can take one tile, and you can either have Roy with his like burning blade attack that'll cause damage on his B, or whatever Crom's standard B is, and just be able to switch with them off of that character title or tile. The other one that they brought in was Dark Samus, for instance, and Dark Samus apparently has some changes to her kit that are going to be slightly different from Samus's. I find that normally a lot of these Echo characters perform about the same with all of their A button based attacks, and their B button attacks are the ones that have the most tweaks to them. Otherwise their inherent characteristics of like speed or weight and things of that nature. But I'm looking forward to the introduction of that. I thought with the fix on Samus, I would be playing her a lot more now that she can charge her B in midair. And then they announced Ridley's release, and I thought, oh, I'll just be playing a lot of Ridley. But now that they mentioned Dark Samus, it's once again like I have decided that I'm going to change my main a third time into a different Metroid character. So once they release Mother Brain and I can just sit in the middle of the stage and shoot projectiles at people, I think I'm locked in at this point.
If they released a baby Metroid, would you play that?
Oh, hell yeah. That would be so good. That'd be really good. I'd totally do that. Just attached to people's heads. You're essentially just playing. You're essentially just playing as either the Metroid Assist Trophy, or I guess you're sort of like the flower. If you can just put the damage multiplier, or not the damage multiplier, but the percent build or the damage over time on them as a Metroid. But you should have really low health. You should be easy to knock out then. Nintendo, I want to see this happen. Anyway, the next things that were announced, and I'll try and fly through the things that are smaller details, but I think the other really big thing were stages. So there are three new stages that have been announced. They are Dracula's Castle.
Just going to skip over King K. Rool.
That was supposed to be the last thing, okay?
It was going to be a surprise at the end, but let's bring it in.
Oh, well, never mind. Ignore me. Sorry for giving it away.
No. King Krul's coming in, and there's going to be a new heavyweight fighter. And this should be really entertaining. Like, I don't play a huge amount of the heavyweight fighters besides Ganon and Ike, if you count him. And I guess Rosalina, who is the densest. But
the thickest?
Yeah, she's my best girl. Is that the right terminology, Neil?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Best girl.
Oh, I know you know. You don't have to feign ignorance with me. King K. Rool's coming in. I can't really tell what a huge amount of his kit is going to be, but it looks like he has his weird little cannon from Donkey Kong Country. And he has a counter move that he uses the like gold plate on his chest and stomach to reflect attacks back. he should be a very fun heavyweight character, because the only other heavyweight with a counter is Ike, and Ike has the sword for reach, but I think Ike doesn't have any sort of projectile attack, and it looks like King K. Rool does have some opportunities to do that. He also seems to have an attack that mimics Donkey Kong's like down B ground pound that locks enemies into the ground. So it seems like he's going to be a really like up close and personal fighter that has a little bit more utility for dealing with enemies at range, but should be very exciting. The announcement was fun to see. And when they take all these characters and they place them on the already massive, like panoramic view of the Smash fighters that are going to be in, there are still a couple of like gaps in which it looks like we're still going to see, I'm going to guess, maybe 3 or 4 more fighters to come in the future here. So King K. Rool is definitely not the last announcement for extra fighters coming in. The new stages, I just wanted to gloss over really quick. Dracula's Castle, New Donk City Hall, and Final Destination. Dracula's Castle looks really interesting because different enemies will show up as bosses, which I think was originally introduced from Brawl, if I remember correctly, where you have stages like Dr. Wily's Fortress would spawn an enemy, or it's like a Brinstar or Meridia, where Ridley would spawn as essentially like a environmental hazard slash boss when you'd play the multiplayer or the battle modes with other people. Dracula's Castle has essentially those mini bosses cycling through at some random interval and selection between Dracula and a bunch of other Castlevania characters that I don't recognize whatsoever, but I'm sure are going to be nostalgic for fans of that series. The most important thing about the new stages is the fact that you can take any stage from the Nintendo, pretty much from the Super Smash Brothers history, and apply Omega or I believe Final Destination. Or wait, I think Omega is the Final Destination format. I think you can do the Battlefield, the Omega, or the Standard format. So every single stage will be available in 8-player lineups, and then they'll also be customized to do the Battlefield like 3-platform flat base format, or the just Final Destination flat base format. And then the last thing is you can actually set up a transformation from one stage to another. So you can select 2 favorite stages, and in the middle of the fight, like some of the, like the Fire Emblem Castle stage, or sometimes with the moving platform stages, you'll see that the stage will start to transform into the other format, and you essentially have to navigate your fighters onto stable ground as the transformation takes place, in which you can also select things like the intervals that the stage changes at and things like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Can I address the other stuff elephant just in the room?
Yeah, sure.
No, go ahead. Do the rest of the updates.
Okay, yeah. The really quick announcements are they're bringing in some new modes or bringing back some old modes. There's the Squad Strike, which seems to be like a team-based battle in which you cycle through characters that you play with. There's a tourney mode that looks to be updated and is one of my favorite ways to play. There is also something called a Smashdown, which you essentially are selecting fighters off of the roster, and once you've completed a fight with them, they are removed from the roster, so you can't have repeat picks. I love that system a lot. And then there is stamina battles coming into the like online multiplayer as a standard game mode, which is one of my favorite ways to play, and so I'm really looking forward to that as well. There are new items, new Pokemon, and new assist trophies, none that really deserve like a huge amount of talk about them. And let's see, you can...
Did you discuss the one mode where you build meter for your Smash, Ultimate Smash?
Yeah, so I think that may be baked in now to the game where if you don't adjust it in the rule set, you can build up meter for your final Smash. I assume it's from participating in doing damage or receiving damage, and you unleash a weaker a weaker version of the like final or ultimate Smash. I think the Smash Ball will still be in the game and will give you a more powered up version of it, which makes sense because you have to put yourself at risk to chase the Smash Ball, and then you do have a period of vulnerability. I'm curious if this final Smash activation, like this weaker final Smash meter, you can actually have it negated if you take enough damage, like with the Smash Ball. So if someone activates it and they don't, if someone reaches the requirements and they don't actually activate it before they take a certain threshold of damage, they lose that opportunity. That would be neat. But I'm not sure about that yet. So I think that's most of the details that really matter. I can't think of any. They still haven't announced Waluigi as the final character yet, but they will
soon.
That was the first.
There was some. Okay, was that the elephant in the room that you're going to talk about? Is the chairs behind Sakurai were purple and gold Waluigi colors?
Yeah, I have another issue too though. What's up with... Okay, Simon Belmont, I get. Simon Belmont is in Super Castlevania 4, which is a very important game for the Super Nintendo. Richter Belmont, on the other hand, the only way I can justify his appearance is that he's around like a treasured era of Nintendo in which his game happens to appear. But his game Dracula X, or... Castlevania Dracula X, whatever. But Richter is otherwise, I think, in three other games. Aside from Dracula X, he's in two games that are basically Dracula X for the Sega and the PC. So, non-Nintendo. The last game he's in, and I could be wrong, maybe there's not a Sega port or version for it, but I think that's the case. The last game he's in is in Symphony of the Night, and for the PlayStation, and then Symphony of the Night for the PC, where he's actually a playable character, but again, for the PC. Now, doesn't that mean that like one quarter of his appearances are actually on Nintendo platforms and the other ones aren't? And yes, I know Solid Snake gets tossed into Smash Brothers for basically just Twin Snakes. My theory is they made Twin Snakes just so they could bring him into Smash.
Just so they could do that? I'm fine with that move.
Yeah.
Joking aside, like, we see that Nintendo's willing to bend some rules to do that. But Richter, I like Dracula X. That's my favorite early Castlevania game. But I really don't see him being, like, the best representative for Castlevania, especially when you have Simon Belmont already. My question is, why is Alucard not like an actual character instead of a trophy? Because like he's not only in Castlevania 3, Curse of the Moon or whatever it is, Circle of the Moon, rather. He's also in, you know, other games that they could bend the rules around, like Symphony of the Night, which is probably the most famous Castlevania game at this point in time. And if not Alucard, you have Soma, who is the reincarnation of Dracula, and also has two GBA games to his name. Again, Nintendo platforms, and is basically Alucard in terms of gameplay. He can do swords. He even gets, I think, a single whip in one of those games. He has axes, lances. These characters are like the perfect Smash Brother formula. Like, they have different spells, different like a huge arsenal. Why is Soma not in the game, or why isn't Alucard in the game? What's up with that?
I think there's an easy answer, and I'll take it if you don't have anything to say on it, Cookie. Okay.
No, sorry. After
so,
you.
Yeah. So here's what I think it is. You've pointed out that Simon Belmont is like a classic choice, a mainstay, and makes absolute sense, right?
Right.
Richter's an Echo fighter. So apparently Richter's kit is very similar to Simon Belmont. And so I think as far as like putting in developmental resources, you just reskin Simon Belmont, you adjust some of his basic stats, and then you tweak some of the B button moves, and you're done. No
they
more
could have
changes
done that
to
anyways.
Character
they
design.
Could have just had him be a costume swap. Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, but,
the lack of Soma or Alucard is horrible.
It's a very easy change, though, to go from Simon Belmont to Richter Belmont, it seems. Like, there's very little work, but then they get to claim a whole new character, essentially. While a reskin doesn't necessarily give, like, lend them the license to do so, they can, in this case, with just a, like, fraction of extra work from their team. Meanwhile, Alucard or Soma, they'd have to be completely rebuilt, right?
I understand the rationale to why Richter exists after deciding on Simon. I just feel that... I feel like Soma or Alucard would have been way more interesting characters to begin with.
So here's the other thing, too, though. The last Smash Brothers was done in a way where there were no secret or like mystery fighters, right? I don't think there were.
Wait. Yes.
There were DLC editions for fighters. I'm pretty sure you got, maybe you didn't get all of the fighters at once, or maybe you did.
You did have to unlock them.
Okay, you had to unlock the fighters, but we knew all of them. We knew Little Mac was coming in. We knew Pac-Man was going to be joining the battle.
Duck Hunt, most importantly.
Yeah, Duck Hunt. Duck Hunt, exactly. So all these characters were announced for us, but we still had to unlock them. We still had to get Greninja after playing a certain amount of time or completing some sort of task. I'm under the impression, though, that one of the ways that they dealt with the fact not having secret characters were the DLC editions down the line, which were, Corrin and Bayonetta and Mewtwo and Roy. Like, they added back in classics and new characters, and there's the opportunity again for them to essentially use Simon Belmont and this introduction of Castlevania IP into the series for its release, and then when DLC characters come about, who knows, maybe we'll see that character Soma in the DLC release. Essentially, they got your like fanboy instincts primed with Simon, and they really want to capitalize on it for that extra $10 in another 6 months.
Something tells me we're not going to see him though at all. We're definitely okay, not going to see Alucard since he's a trophy thing or whatever.
I mean, but when they bring Waluigi out of the assist trophy territory and into the top tier playable character territory, like we could expect a similar treatment for Alucard.
What if Waluigi never came after all this teasing?
It's tragic. That would be really disappointing, because it could truly be the ultimate PR move for Nintendo at this point. Waluigi gets released from an assist trophy in a video and turns into a playable character, and the internet breaks for a day. You know, it seems like it's the obvious choice to me. But I will say that with the introduction of a new IP, I always feel like that is leaving fertile ground for them to follow up with DLC stuff later. And it may not be Soma, but there are other characters from Castlevania. They added a Castlevania map, which makes me think that that is another way to essentially establish further ground to bring in more characters for their DLC editions. Because I'd be very surprised if they did not bring any sort of DLC into the game, even though there's so much content at this point. With how successful it was last time, I mean, it was one of the few games that I knew people who were really reticent to pay for DLC still shell out for, because they were so excited for the new fighters like Ryu and whatnot. And it would be something that would maybe even work on me, because Super Smash Bros. Is one of the few games that I think, oh, well, paying $80 or $90 for this game is still relatively cheap when I think about the number of gameplay hours I get out of it in the end.
I like it.
Our main topic of the day, just wanted to go over great games despite having horrible characteristics, whether it's great story, horrible gameplay, or horrible gameplay, or excuse me, great gameplay, horrible story. And I think as we're going to talk through some of these things, we might end up arguing about what constitutes horrible story or horrible gameplay and so forth. Scott, you were, well, I guess both of you were excited with a specific title or two in mind. So did either of you want to start?
I feel like mine's going to spark argument, so Cookie should go first.
Mine's not going to spark argument, at least not among us three, since I'm the only one who plays fighting games, really. But I will say that I'm not a huge fan of your... So if you're a fighter, if you play fighting games, you either like the Capcom style of inputs, so quarter circles and the more fluid motion, are you like the...
You mean the good inputs. Continue.
Exactly. Are you like the Mortal Kombat style of inputs, which is down back or down forward plus input, which is going to include your Mortal Kombats, your Injustices, anything made by NetherRealm Studios?
Right.
Me, I am of the same ilk as you, Neil, and I like the right way of doing it, the Capcom style, because why would you not have it that way? So when it comes to good story, love Injustice. Injustice 2 was an okayer story, and the just Mortal Kombat X, when they were like, oh yeah, video games can have story modes, this works. I just can't play those games because, man, those button inputs are just so... Everything feels really weighted down in those games.
But you really like the story mode for Mortal Kombat X? And
yeah,
9 or whatever it was before, the game beforehand?
Yeah, I enjoyed like going through the stories and watching the entire universe reset in 9, or was the reset in Armageddon, or was Armageddon 9. It doesn't matter. Mortal Kombat's got a convoluted story. A lot of shit happens. But yeah, so I'd like to go with, throw my hat in the ring for terrible story, great gameplay is going to be your Mortal Kombats and your Injustices. And I'll also go...
Wait, you mean terrible, great story, terrible gameplay?
I think you... Yeah, great story, terrible gameplay.
Yeah, flip that around. And then if I got to go with a fighting game that's got terrible convoluted story, great gameplay, the new... Well, okay-ish gameplay, the newest Marvel vs. Capcom game that did not make it at Evo because who the fuck would play that?
That's a situation where I feel like the gameplay is like not up to Marvel... Like your typical Marvel bar, I guess.
Actually, yeah. Yeah, never mind. Ignore me on that one then. Yeah, you're right, because no one was playing that game.
But man, that fucking story. That story was one dumpster fire. Like,
ooh, Dragon Ball.
I kind of want to watch it just because it's so stupid, but... What was that?
No, that story was garbage. Dragon Ball FighterZ, which did make its Evo, has a story mode. Don't bother. Just don't bother.
Yeah, what? So the story mode, what is it? Is it just literally playing through important chapters of the Dragon Ball Z like storyline?
No.
Or?
No. So you as the player goes into the game. Goku loses all of his power. So you first start off with using Goku because your soul is now within Goku. So you control him.
Right,
and he gains more power as time goes on, and they get the swap in, swap out mechanic because you're the only person, you as the player is the only person that can unleash the hidden potential and the power of these characters. So you as the soul has to swap into a different character. Thus, the tag battle system makes more sense.
Thank God Kirito somehow made it into the Dragon Ball universe. What's her name? Is it Mary Sue? Excellent. Yeah, but yeah, that's so, not very good. I think it would have been fine had it just been like a retelling of the game. Like, did you ever
the important chapters?
Play, yeah, did you ever, Scott specifically, did you ever play the JoJo Fighter on PlayStation or Dreamcast?
No, but
it really
I
was
did.
Like a real retelling of the manga, and it had like panel storytelling, and then it also had like mini games. Like when you're betting against Darby, it has a mini game where you're dropping coins into the glass of scotch or whiskey, excuse me. A mini game where you're playing poker against him, and a bunch of other things. It was fucking spectacular.
This sounds so awesome.
Unfortunately, see, it is a great game with great story, so it does not fit this particular
conversation. It doesn't qualify, yeah.
I can honestly say that that was my introduction to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I did not know it was a manga or an anime. It started with just the video game.
Was that not fucking bizarre as hell?
So bizarre, I was like, nah, I can't play this. It's too King of Fighters for me.
Yeah, you know what? It actually, like, I feel like it's the nostalgia glasses for me. It's probably not a great fighter. It's probably pretty mediocre, but
I think it had a pretty decent following. Like I said, there's the Marvel camp of fighting, the Capcom camp of fighting, the Mortal Kombat camp of fighting, and then the King of Fighters camp of fighting.
What is Soul Calibur? Just out of curiosity, it's one of the only fighters I have.
They don't play fighters, actually.
Is it?
No. In truth, I feel like
Soul Calibur, bad story, bad gameplay.
I feel like it's very much a casual, like every person in any camp can go and play Soul Calibur, plus the people that don't play fighters.
And the people who want to get hardcore into Soul Calibur switch to Dead or Alive.
Yep.
That combo system.
And then Dead or Alive has two separate camps. One camp that likes the beach volleyball.
And one camp that likes the double X roses.
Oh, God.
But yeah, so that's kind of my my tossing into the hat of, like, when it comes to, hey, fighting games do have, there are fighters with good stories that have just shitty gameplay. There are fighters with really good gameplay that have shitty stories. Dive Kick. Great gameplay.
I mean, there's no story, though, right? Like, I think there's a difference shitty story and non-existent story.
There's somewhat of a story.
Do you think Tekken 1 has a story, really? Like, or Street Fighter 2? Like, I think there's a difference between having epilogues at the end of your arcade mode and having cutscenes that are fucking terrible, aka Marvel Ultimate.
Yeah, no, makes sense. I will say Street Fighter 2 is a part of the Street Fighter universe, and they found some kind of way to make those canonical, I guess.
Yeah, through,
and
like,
when it comes
through TV shows and through manga, they started to like further establish the story. But
with things like, hey, you just do the arcade mode and here's a little, this is what this person goes on to do. Yatta.
Yeah.
No, you make a good point there. Either way, Scott, make us angry.
I don't know if I'm going to really do anything to upset Cookie here, besides bringing up Soul Calibur as a fighter.
How dare you? Ivy's chain is useless.
This one goes out to you, Neil. Games with just spectacular gameplay and terrible story is hard to say, but I think it's fair for... I think terrible story should be something that we consider a fair application or tag to something that will confuse or completely just fly over the heads of any normal gamer dropped into it. Regardless if they have played another game in the series or not. Because I understand there are some games in a series that will have obviously a lot of like background narrative that if you didn't play the first four Halos, you have a couple questions as to why, what is going on. But at the end of the day, the goal is ultimately like do the thing that saves the day for whatever group or faction you're operating with. And that's very clear to you. Like, when I, just to give a preview example, when I played Halo 3, I had not actually played Halo 1 or 2 yet. And so I understood enough in Halo 3 of what I was supposed to be doing that it didn't matter that I didn't have a huge amount of background about who the Covenant were, like who the Arbiter is and why I'm allied with an alien, things like that. They fill you in enough that you can at least follow along with the standard narrative. A game in which I think it may be near impossible for someone who's never played any of the previous games before to suss out the actual like meanings and interactions of what's going on. And even to players who are familiar with the storyline are not always completely in the loop unless they do a lot of like background either like research or pay very close attention while they play. It's Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, I was going to guess Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, I can't even, I don't even follow Kingdom Hearts. All I know is that Kingdom Hearts is Disney and Final Fantasy, and they have wackily like large clown shoes, and that is all I understand about that game.
You're pretty much with 90% of the population.
Yeah.
Good job.
Metal Gear Solid 5, a game that I think the gameplay is some of my favorite I've done in sort of open world tactical espionage almost ever. And yet, I've played most every Metal Gear Solid game besides, I think, Metal Gear Acid and Metal Gear, whatever the other one for the PSP was.
Peace Walker?
Peace Walker.
No, that was Vita? I don't remember.
I played Peace Walker.
Okay.
Acid?
Acid was that was like a PSP game.
It was a turn-based, tile-based combat game.
Yeah.
Alternate universe too, so like you don't have to play it to fully appreciate the Metal Gear Solid storyline for its grandeur.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Which is where I'm getting the hints that maybe I have touched a nerve slightly, which I understand. I just think that an example is there's no better example of a game that is almost impossible to be breached like Metal Gear Solid games are. And Metal Gear Solid 5 is such a great example because not only is it a game that has amazing gameplay that I adore, but it's also wedged in between other events in a franchise that is already erratic and chaotic and wildly interconnected in a way that had I not played all of the games leading up to it, I would have been truly beyond any capacity of understanding. And instead, since I have played every game, really necessary to understand the plot prior to it besides Peace Walker, which does leave me with a bit of a gap as to how Metal Gear Solid 5 really starts out, like who's Paz and Chico and all these folks.
Yeah, you literally don't have, like, that's probably the most important game to know, that and 3.
Which, and I've played three to completion 4 or 5 times at least. Like, that was, up until Metal Gear Solid 5, my favorite Metal Gear Solid game by far. And I think made me appreciate, it is a large contributing factor as to why I appreciated Metal Gear Solid 5 so much, gameplay-wise. Story-wise, though, truly, I think the issue with Kojima Games is just he has these like really philosophical narratives that he is ultimately trying to employ and then, if not solve, then at least answer some things and leave larger questions for the player to tackle once finishing the games, which I respect and enjoy from a narrative or storytelling point. I just think that the opacity of these games to the general player is really beyond the scope of what you can expect out of most people. And therefore, I have to say, like, it's very difficult to appreciate as a narrative game unless you are, like, a diehard for the series.
Yeah, I don't think I can argue against that, because you're absolutely right. You have to have a degree of knowledge of previous games. You basically have,
you have to have a
knowledge
degree,
of
maybe even a master's. Like
at least a master's, if not a doctorate. But you really do need to know like every game to some extent to actually enjoy every aspect of Metal Gear Solid 5. And so in weird ways, it's kind of like a love letter to the MGS fanatics. Also kind of a kick in the nads because the game really wasn't finished.
Yeah.
But like even to enjoy it at its core, like in a way that you don't have to understand the meta of it, but you still need to understand the basic structure of the story. You need to understand Metal Gear Solid 3 to some extent for all of these titles, Peace Walker, and a little bit of like Metal Gear 1 and 2.
Metal Gear
Otacon. Because it, like, otherwise, even at that point, you miss out on so much of the tie-ins, because Metal Gear Solid 5 does such, it tries to accomplish this task of tying together Metal Gear with Metal Gear Solid, and Metal Gear Solid, like, the entire loop. Like, because in some way, the narrative storytelling of Metal Gear as a franchise pushes you from the start of the series into the future and before it can finally resolve itself, at least if it wanted to do its job well. It takes us back into the past to resolve Metal Gear Solid 3 and how that eventually leads up into Metal Gear again. And like, if those are the principal storylines in that game, not knowing how the loop begins and ends and what the relevance of that is like, it leads to the very basic conclusion that if you don't know those games, the story is just kind of garbage. Like, the most compelling thing about Metal Gear Solid 5, in my opinion, is how V and Big Boss actually differ. And like, if you take that away from me, I think Metal Gear Solid's story is mediocre at best. Metal Gear Solid 5, excuse me.
I think it may also be, I just realized it may be fair to say that a lot of these Metal Gear game conclusions are easier to appreciate or have like more impact when the next game, like the game that comes after that conclusion, occurs in the storyline.
Yeah.
Because they oftentimes end with enough ambiguity up until, I guess, this last game, that once you get the next game and you see the impact of these events that have occurred, you really do appreciate the conclusion, I think, a little bit more. And since maybe MGS5 is the last game in the series, and it's tying right back into Metal Gear Solid, it has, like, the impact is a little bit harder to appreciate, because you're not picking up where you left off, but instead, like, finishing the story where you started.
I would almost even beg or argue that, like, it's similar in a way that Dark Souls 3's story, or the lore, I guess you could say, probably suffers a shit ton if you haven't played Dark Souls 1. Well, I mean, it definitely does. I don't know if it necessarily drops
Absolutely.
As much as Metal Gear Solid 5 does if you haven't consumed any portion of the other series, but... Yeah, I think that's a pretty bold statement there, but I can't argue that much against it, because there's so many conditions you have to meet to unlock like the most enjoyable portions of that story. For mine, I had two examples. Oh, did you have any others that you wanted to bring up? Sorry,
I was gonna say, and this actually doesn't warrant discussion, but it's a great like launch pad to the other game that I thought of. That it's not necessarily. I had a really hard time finding games with terrible, terrible story that I've played that had great gameplay, but Dark Souls 2 is another great example. Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 3 make a like combined cohesive narrative, and Dark Souls 2 could be completely eliminated from the genre or from the series, and I think there would be zero issue whatsoever. The benefits that Dark Souls 2 really invoked upon development of Bloodborne and then later Dark Souls 3 were the mechanics that they updated in those games. And I thought that, I just thought about that now, that it is very similar to the Metal Gear Solid format, in which if you take Dark Souls 2 out of the picture, but you keep all of the mechanical enhancements it would have contributed to the games down the line, I think it's totally fine that the game wouldn't exist. Like, nobody's thinking about how much they love the stories of Dark Souls 2, because it was just so so separate and in a completely, like, in its own microcosm compared to the rest of the series as a whole. But that's all I had to say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. For me, I had two polar opposites. One with, like, what I considered to be, like, a really great story, or at least for its time, because storytelling's gotten so much better in video games, and horrible gameplay, and then the opposite, great gameplay, horrible story. Wait, actually, shit, now that I think about it, both of these are an example of bad gameplay with great story. I had another example, but it's eluding me at this point. Deadly Premonition. I've been wanting to pick that game up again. I installed it, applied some very basic fixes, or like patches, because the Steam version's apparently pretty fucked up. But let me tell you, this would be like the third or fourth time going through, it was specifically the hospital level, going through the hospital and having to deal with the fucking horrible transition from regular detective FBI weird dude simulator into horrible shooting zombie mode. And like, that game is so charming in its story and in like all of the mechanics based around the investigation and traversing and so forth, and sometimes in like an ironic way, like the driving is so terrible it's fun. But I hate the combat. The combat makes that game so terrible. It is the worst combat ever. And like in newer versions of the game, they basically trivialize the difficulty as an attempt to save face for that and make it more bearable. But good God, I cannot keep going through that hospital. I cannot keep going through that like wood or the wood mill. Like every time I hit one of those, I immediately drive myself to go onto Google and see if someone has made a skip combat patch for this game yet. Like, there's a patch for Dragon Age Origins which allows you to skip the Mage's Tower dream sequence, which, thank God, because that sequence is annoying as fuck. You've done it once.
That's terrible, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the patch literally just... The dream starts, you do the last part of the dream, you get out of it, and you get all of the experience and items that you would have had you done the entire dream sequence. Perfect. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist for Deadly Premonition now. And maybe it's because it's taking out a core fundamental like combat entirely. But I find myself like struggling to get back into Deadly Prem because the combat is so fucking bad. I can recommend it to anyone that like hasn't played the game before, because I think the weirdness of the game gets you through, but like consecutive playthroughs, it's becoming too much for me. So you guys might have heard of the game Final Fantasy Tactics, which was like heralded by
Fire Emblem
to be like a great, yeah, great game.
Final Fantasy.
It's a tactical turn-based, or it's a tactical RPG, your turn-based grid map. You move your characters around, you change classes, lots of things that make it like a staple or classic within the Final Fantasy setting. The team that made FFT made a game beforehand that they really kind of took a lot of the inspirations from this game and put it into FFT, especially in the story. And that game was called Tactics Ogre. And it was the sequel-ish to Ogre Battle, another classic Nintendo game. Ogre Battle would have later installments on the N64 and I think Game Boy Advance. Tactics Ogre has a really interesting story that mixes a little bit of fantasy and magic elements into largely a politically driven narrative about essentially an island that is or was rich of resources getting inhabited by neighboring countries, and playing as a character leading a revolution, a rebellion, and like part of that involves like your army is made up of different people from these three different races, and depending on the choices you make, you can actually start to alienate people in your army, and they'll even quit or desert based on what your moral decisions are. Lots of cool things to it. Again, it's an early PlayStation game, so it's not like the best storytelling scheme at that point, but really, really interesting. And for good reason, a lot of the plot devices and things they came up with in Tactics Ogre, they ended up reusing in Final Fantasy Tactics, which was, you know, more widely played. However, unlike FFT, where the gameplay even now is still pretty fun, Tactics Ogre is painful, straight down to the menu. Like, simple things like having to always confirm where you're moving and always having to hit the move command before you can move your character and things like that. Oof. The piled in or like coupled with the fact that it's a PlayStation game and has loading between each command, like unlike a PC game where everything can be very fluid and fast. Tactics Ogre, great story, I'd say, considering the time. Gameplay just makes it unbearable. Unbearable.
It has loading? Weird. It looks like it was a... Well, at least according to the Wikipedia page, it was actually originally for the Super Famicom.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. It was originally for the Super Famicom, but it came out for us in America and on the PC. But even then, like, there are certain things... Or PC, PlayStation, excuse me. There are certain things that, like, there was always still just more time between selecting the options that existed on the SNES as well. Like, the amount of delay from frame to frame or option to option, like, grossly ruins the experience.
So it played at 15 frames per second, but you just had to make sure that you hit it at that right exact moment for it to go perfectly?
Maybe. No, I it's a little different, I guess. It's hard to explain.
I was making a joke. It doesn't matter.
Looking for something? I haven't seen any. Are there any in the garage?
Hey, Scott.
Yo.
Do you want to play a game with me?
What game?
Resolver.
Gloomhaven.
Gloomhaven. Have not heard of it. We'll have to look it up. We can talk about it after the pod.
Oh.
Oh, so looks like a board game. Sweet.
It is a board game, but... They're coming out with a... They announced at the... Oh, God. What is the thing called? The big board game conference. Big board game conference. They announced
Gen Con? They do board gaming? Okay.
Yeah, Gen Con. They announced that they're releasing a electronic version.
Ooh, okay.
So like that you can actually play with friends.
Yeah, I'd play. That sounds good to me.
Hopefully it's not as expensive as the actual board game, which I'm starting a campaign on Tuesday.
Is it kind of obscenely expensive for the board game?
It was $135 on sale.
That's quite a bit, yeah. Well, since we are in a natural break for half a second and Neil is gone, I'm going to run to the bathroom and be right back in like 2 seconds. I see Neil's back. I have to go before he sits down.
Wait, what just happened?
Oh, that was great.
What did I miss?
He decided to go to the bathroom, and then he's like, oh God, all these excuses aren't going to work. Since Neil's about to sit down, I have to leave before he sits down. And just as you sit down. Hi, Neil. How have you been?
Not too bad. We're getting close to two, so we better wrap things up.
I was going to say, we're at a natural progression of the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, Neil, what do you think about thick picks?
What are thick picks?
like thick guitar picks.
Oh, okay. I literally looked up THICC space PICS.
Wow.
Thinking, like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh, okay. Weird. I don't know. I don't really have a preference when it comes to guitar picks. I mean, what I'm saying is that I don't think there's anything wrong with using really thick ones or really thin ones.
It's like I never left.
Exactly. So, guys, I think that just about does it for Fancy Ramen today. If you have comments, questions, whatever, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't forget to leave a like, subscribe, wherever you get your podcast at.
And please, make sure you guys tell a friend about the podcast. If you're enjoying it, you should share the fun with someone else as well. It's the best way for us to get new listeners. And we always welcome more growth to our platform.
I don't think we have a topic for next week, but there might be a surprise for next week, on my side at least.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Wait,
I guess.
Did you have a topic in mind?
Oh, no. I was just like, I was thinking to myself actually whether or not, no, we'll do the podcast like normal. It might have to be a little later in the afternoon if that's okay with you guys, because I'll be flying back in on Sunday morning. So
that'll fly for me just fine, I think.
Fly.
Postscript, though, on the one more game I thought of that I had written down about and then had forgotten and now have re-remembered. Perfect example of a game with gameplay that is mediocre in the most generous way I can say it, but has a very interesting story and concept, is a game called Asura's Wrath. And so
you take that back.
Whoa,
you,
man.
Do you like the gameplay in Asura's Wrath?
I thought
it
was fine.
I vaguely remember the game Asura's Wrath.
Like, mediocre might be a good way to put it. I wouldn't say horrible.
Oh, yeah, you take that back.
Okay.
That's a brilliant story with beautiful gameplay.
Okay. Parasite Eve is a really, really good game. It's really interesting how you have, have you guys played Parasite Eve?
No.
It's a modern time RPG that has, like, movement and such. And I don't even know how to describe it.
What? It has movement?
Yeah, Parasite Eve is cool. It's like it was a direction that RPGs could have gone that never grabbed or like took hold. And then it had a really stupid storyline that involved your mitochondria taking over your body.
That's real though.
Yeah.
Trust me, it is.
So your mitochondria causes what is it? Self-combustion?
Oh, like
spontaneous combustion?
Yeah,
spontaneous combustion, yes. Or it makes you into a monster. Those two things happen. And that's the premise for Parasite Eve.
That does sound about right. I remember my immunology textbook going over that. yeah, if you don't believe me, look up the immune system, Parnum 2012. It's in there. I think it's chapter 8.
All right. Have a great week, everyone.
You as well.
Bye.